Large white letters appear from behind the planet Earth, revealing the word Universal. Then a caption says, a Paramount picture. Behind it is a steep snow-capped mountain. There's an old red book with the title The Shepherd of the Hills. There's a picture of a young couple sitting together under a tree on the cover and the name Harold Bell Wright. The book opens up. The fly page says The Shepherd of the Hills in Technicolor. There's an etched image of an old man sitting in front of a piano. The page is turned again and the names of the cast are shown. It's starring John Wayne as young Matt, Betty Field as Sammy Lane and Harry Carey as Daniel Howitt. Screenplays by Grover Jones and Stuart Anthony. Produced by Jack Moss. Directed by Henry Hathaway, voiced by Stephen O'Neill on behalf of MCS Agency. There's a mountain lake, the hills that surround it are covered in trees, and the landscape is untouched by civilization. Three men in jeans, denim shirts, waistcoats, hunting jackets, and Stetson hats scamper between large rocks on the hillside.
Kind of free with your powder, ain't you?
Not when I'm aiming at a moonshiner with four jugs slung over his shoulder.
Yeah, well, according to the law, a man's got a right to tote his liquor wherever it fits him best, inside or out. And he ain't a moonshiner until he sells it and gets caught at it.
You know, the way you talk up for these superstitious mountain people, you'd think that every third shiner is your nephew.
Well, I've been up here long enough for the government to know just where I stand. And you better be careful pot-shotting at these nephews, whose uncle I ain't.
Hey, Charlie, come here, take a look at this.
They join the other man who's crouching on a rock, pointing down at a bloodstain on it.
Uh-huh. I told you I got him.
Cow.
Cow?
Yeah. Lamentin' cow. Full udder and nobody to milk her.
Lamentin', huh?
A grey-bearded man in a thick shirt and brown waistcoat watches them from further up the hill, then turns and blows on a cow horn. There are dozens of clay jugs behind a rock. A man in his 30s with rugged features, wearing a grey shirt, braces and brown trousers, picks up a couple of the jugs and sends them down a wooden chute built onto the side of the rock face. They land on a cushion below and are being loaded into saddlebags on the backs of waiting mules. An older, rather sour-faced woman carrying several jugs frowns.
Snakes.
The man at the top of the chute whistles and gestures at the men below to stop and leave. They do so. A bearded man laden with jugs looks concerned. The man at the top of the chute puts on a Stetson hat. The older woman is busying herself amongst the liquor jugs nearby.
Get these hid away from here.
Let Wash do it.
Do what you're told.
Jim Lane's standing watch for us at Holler Ridge.
Let him find his own cover.
He gives the old woman a pointed look and walks away. The woman turns to the bearded man.
Get these things hid away.
She enters a makeshift brewery inside a cave where men are stirring large vats of liquid.
Douse that fire. Where's the smoke? Hire deep revenuers. Dump that mesh and scatter till I call you.
The three men from the hunting party, carrying their shotguns, are heading around the perimeter of the lake. Nearby, at the water's edge, is a rustic old house with a water wheel beside it. The men stop and look towards it.
Who lives there?
Jim Lane and his daughter, Sammy.
Inside the wood and stone cabin, Sammy, in a red dress, is standing at a table barefoot, preparing food. An older man with a moustache and wavy ginger hair is sitting cross-legged on a bed, playing an accordion, with a blanket draped over his shoulder. The three men approach the front door of the house.
Come in.
The grey-haired man enters the house first and takes off his hat with a smile.
Andy!
Hello, Sammy. Yeah, you're looking fine. How's everything with you, Jim?
Well, Andy, I can't complain. You're here just in time. We got a powerful lot of Johnny Cake and squirrels, too.
There's only one more plate unless they want to eat stew out in their hands.
No, thanks, Sammy. We got business to attend to. Well, are you satisfied?
Andy's colleague gives Jim a suspicious look.
along, Jim. Bye, Sammy.
Goodbye.
Sammy pushes the wooden latch door closed behind them. She looks a little troubled and hurries to the window at the table where she was working. Jim is lying face down on the floor with a bloodstain in his right shoulder blade.
They hit me without no warning. Easy, young.
Don't hurt out loud, Pappy. Here, I'm careful. I'm murdering hounds.
I was right down at the fork of the creek.
Young Matt giving you sorghum beer for spotting revenues while he's a-toting his corn whiskey down into town. Someday I'll...
Don't aggravate yourself. It's me you shot. Tate, like it was young Matt's
yeah,
fault.
Yeah, it's you that shot, just like you said. Not him.
Sammy, crouching over her injured father, turns slowly and looks at the door. She stands up.
Come in.
The door opens and a man in his 60s with a careworn face enters in a heavy black suit, hat and tie. Sammy glares at him.
What do you want?
My name's Daniel Howard.
He's noticed the wounded man lying at Sammy's feet. Sammy watches as Daniel frowns and moves into the house, crouching beside Jim.
Don't you touch him.
This looks bad.
Stop being bad and turn worse.
I can take care of him.
Sammy starts to lift Jim up off the floor by his shoulders. Daniel helps and they maneuver him onto the little bed. Daniel lifts the man's legs and swings them round so that Jim's on his side on the bed.
Bullet's still with him.
I said I can take care of him. I got salve, I got cobwebs spun in
November. This is no time to argue. Boil some water and get some clean rags.
Sammy looks unsure but moves away from her father. Daniel starts to remove Jim's shirt. Later, Jim's tucked up in bed. Daniel is wiping his hands on a towel. Sammy's pouring a drink from a copper jug into a cup. Daniel sits in front of the cup at a round table. He's doing up his cuffs. Sammy stands over him.
When do you aim to take him?
Take him?
You're just welling him to take him to jail, ain't you?
I've been trying to tell you I'm Daniel Howard. I came here to get some information, to get acquainted.
Why?
Well, I'd like to buy a piece of land and settle down here.
Why?
By gunny, a man is right clever with me and you act like he was a fine hair.
Folks like him don't come to land what's been corned out. Land with seed ticks and chinch bugs and whooping cough and... Why'd you come?
I didn't ask you how he got shot.
No. You didn't for a fact.
A tentative smile appears on Sammy's face. Daniel smiles back at her. In the twilight, one of the moonshiners rides his horse down a slope and passes an owl in a tree.
Evening, brother.
In the stone cabin, Daniel glances at Sammy, who's listening. She rushes to the door and runs towards the man on the horse.
Hello, Sammy.
Keep jogging, young man. Don't you get off on that horse.
Now, don't get your dander up. I just come to see is your paw home.
He is, and we don't need you and your kind asking after him.
Well, I guess then I'll have to invite myself in.
Young Matt gets down off his horse and slaps its rump.
Get on up the hill, Roddy. Tell Aunt Molly I want stack cakes. Roast yearling coon with plenty of gravy.
And tell her we ain't aiming to stand for no more sickness and misery.
Why ain't the birds a-hollering pretty?
You and your devilment. Aunt Molly and old Matt and their pies and ways making people are scared of living.
There's bluebirds nesting all over the mountain.
Liquor toting and getting drunk and raising Jupiter to suit yourselves.
Your eyes are cussing pretty, didn't they?
Making the hands do your bidding. Giving the sick a soon start to die. Making the well dark-eyed and fearful. Why can't your dead mother keep unhappiness in her grave?
He slaps her.
Leave my mother be.
She stares at him with a tear in her eye. Matt appears to relent and hugs her tightly.
Oh, Matt, why do you keep doing it? All the way up the trail he bled.
What are you talking about?
They shot him, Matt.
Matt marches along the veranda and enters her house. He rushes to Jim's bedside with a look of concern.
Did he? I'm all right.
What happened?
I was drinking when I should have been watching.
Andy Beeler?
And two new ones with him.
Looks like he'll never learn. Well, they're starting something they better know how to finish.
He looks round. Daniel's now standing next to Sammy, watching the interchange. Matt stares at the elderly newcomer and gets up slowly. Then he looks at Sammy and gestures at Daniel with his shotgun.
Who's he?
My name's Daniel Howard.
What's he here for?
He's my cousin.
Now that
this here is young Matt Matthews.
Daniel's expression changes slightly. He looks a little surprised.
Mr. Howard says he's going to live here.
That's right. I plan to stay here.
It ain't likely for strangers to find these parts to settle down in.
Daniel shuffles from side to side.
I brought along some good fishing tackle. We might give him a trial when the weather's right.
Matt glares at him and turns back to Jim.
Let me know, can I do anything for you, Jim?
He marches out of the house. Daniel and Sammy watch him go. Sammy looks at Daniel and moves to the door, which she pushes shut. Daniel turns and leans on the table, looking out of the window at Matt, who's moving across rocks at the edge of the lake. In the moonlight, Matt trudges slowly up the hill. Several rocks dominate the hilltop in a tower-like formation ahead of him. Matt now stops and looks at a grand old fir tree. There's a mound of dirt at the foot of it, and a patch of bark has been cut away from the base of the tree, and the name Sarah's been carved into the space. Some ferns flutter around it in the breeze. Matt just stares at the grave with a solemn expression. His silhouette is cast across it, and he takes off his hat. He sighs to himself and crouches down.
Even Sammy's seeing it now, Mom. All the lies they teached her. Blaming us for all their ills and suffering. You for all the unseen things God lets be. Me for the fighting and meanness. Maybe they're right about me, but you.
His expression hardens.
I'll stop him. Some one of these days I'll find him. Him that never came back to you.
Several lightning bolts streak across the cloudy sky above the trees. In the stone cottage, Sammy is making candles on the little round dining table. Daniel standing behind her, watching and smiling as she pours wax into long, thin moulds. The old man, with his hands in his pockets, approaches the bed that Jim's lying on.
Do you suppose the Matthews would sell me some of their land?
Might, if you was that crazy.
They got money cramps.
But don't let them sell you Moaning Meadow.
Moaning Meadow?
That's where the ha'nt comes from. Frogs as quiet as grave rocks, and the light coming from nowhere. The trees don't rustle. The flowers grow big, but they don't have pretty smells.
Bad land. Like everything has got the name of Matthews is bad.
Excepting young Matt. He ain't naturally bad. Them's the one that makes him so.
Them?
Them's the one that the dead rest. His uncle, old Matt, with his fire-spitting tongue. That old she-devil crow, Aunt Molly, and Pete. Without no brains and no hope. All of them making Matt a sick soul, raising him to murder. To murder his pa, who run off and left him.
And all of them guilting her. She who never done no hurt to no one of God's critters.
She?
His mother.
Daniel becomes thoughtful and sits on the edge of Jim's bed. Then a young man appears at the window of the house, the rain's pouring down the window pane. He peers inside.
Coot. It's Coot Royal.
Sammy opens the door to the wet man who's holding a blanket around his shoulders.
The baby.
Yeah, she's needing some elm bark tea. Poor young'un can't hardly breathe. She's near dying.
I got it.
No, you don't, Captain. You stay here. You're too gaunted.
I'll go with her.
It's just a trap and a gallop down the trail.
Sammy hurries out, followed by Daniel, who puts on his hat. In a log cabin, a little girl is laid out on her back on a bed. A dark-haired woman is crying at her bedside. Some dollies are on a nearby chair, and an old grey-haired woman is sitting in a rocking chair.
knowed it. I knowed it when I heard the fox bark in the night. And my voice growed damp when I prayed.
The door to the cabin opens and Coot leads Sammy and Daniel inside. The dark-haired woman gets up, rushes to Sammy and takes her hand. Daniel sits on the edge of the child's bed and starts to examine her, looking concerned. He checks her pulse, then studies her eyes. He feels her neck.
Sammy. Get a clean rag and a little stick.
The girl's mother slumps down on the floor beside the old woman in the rocking chair. Daniel pats the child on the back.
Fix me a swab, Sammy.
Sammy starts to rip up the rag she's holding.
She's done it. She sent the hex on us.
It's me done it, granny lady, because I ain't never been no good. The sorriest critter on the crick, with things always winding out black for me. And nothing to give you but poke salad and no good hog mollies.
You give me more than that. You always call me lady. And I can sit here and rest myself in a milk-white castle. It's her and Moaning Meadow that walks through the night, touching nothing but laying her hand on all. It's them darn Matthews on the knob. It's him, the spitting snake that never come back to claim his own woods colt. It's him.
Daniel continues to tend the sick girl. Then slowly the little girl's eyelids flicker and she opens her eyes. The mother, sobbing into her hand, lifts her head and looks towards the child. The little girl turns her head and smiles at her. Her mother looks overjoyed. The little girl looks at Coot and smiles at him too. He crouches down behind his wife and pats her shoulders.
A good shepherd.
Daniel's tucking the young girl up in her bed. Sammy passes him one of the rags, which he takes off her and puts down and rubs his hands together.
Your little girl was choked up and became unconscious. Just keep her throat clear and keep her wrapped up warm and she'll be all right tonight.
By tomorrow she'll be begging to wade the creek and asking what makes the sky blue, won't she?
Your daddy be getting anxious, won't he? Sammy?
Stranger.
The old woman in the rocking chair puts out her hand. Daniel takes it, and she holds his hand tightly. He looks towards Sammy. A smile appears across the young woman's face. Daniel smiles back at her warmly. Daytime. Sammy and Daniel are now walking along a path running through the countryside. There's a rickety old wooden fence beside them. Sammy skips through a puddle with her bare feet. She wears rolled-up jeans and a beige crew-necked jumper. Daniel's in his black suit and black hat.
Good mud is.
No, but I wish I had.
Sammy stops and looks down at a giant puddle in front of her.
I almost stepped on a cloud.
The barefooted woman navigates the edge of the puddle. Then the couple head past a barn, outside which a man's shoeing a horse.
Morning and howdy to you, Sammy.
Same to you, Kip Wife Mendon.
Aye, she's talking like a windmill.
Another man's preparing fish.
Yeah, I catched him down by the old beanie.
Grasshopper bait?
No, noodling.
Yeah?
They stroll into a hamlet of several wooden buildings.
Hello, Mrs. Schultz. How's the baby?
Just fine.
Wait, Sammy. I want to go in the store for a minute. We might need some more money when we get up to Matthews.
Sammy peers at Daniel and appears confused.
Corky? He won't lend you no money. He won't even let you look at none.
I don't want to borrow any money. I only want to cash a check.
A check?
Yeah, a check is a piece of paper, a note.
Like a mortgage?
Well, no, not exactly. A check is a check is an exchange.
You mean like a swap?
Well, yes, in a way. You see, a check is a letter. A letter to the bank where I have my money, telling them to pay cash to whoever has that letter.
Sammy looks shifty.
Is it honest?
Yes, if you have the money in the bank.
She considers this, then nods.
All right. Like to see you do it.
Hello, Hank.
Hello, Sammy.
Well, now let's see, Miss Palestone.
Hello, Mrs. Conley.
I got Colby's cholera tincture, Miss Wassup soothing syrup, Kittredge's salve, and Wahoo tonic. Could be, though, she might be needing worm cakes.
Nope, tain't that. I put a dried tater chip and two crawdad legs in her bed, but she still got that seldom feeling, complaining from head to heel.
How much is there? I'm getting tired of soaking sugar sops.
Better do something about that neck rash you got there.
Tain't rash. It's a dye if I'm off in my shirt.
I didn't souse it enough in lye water.
You ought to see our young'uns. Just like a passel of pure redskins.
Them's 30 cents. The mouthpiece is for nothing.
30 cents?
The shop is cluttered with all kinds of goods.
Howdy, Sammy. Been wanting to meet your cousin. Hello, Mr. Howard.
How do you do, sir?
He wants to cash a check. One of them letters to where he's got money in the bank.
How much do you reckon to want, Mr. Howard?
Well, if it's convenient, I could use $100.
The shopkeeper's face drops. His other customers look shocked. He smiles nervously.
You could use $100?
Yes, if it's convenient.
Well,
I have letters of identification here.
Well, Sammy's say-so is all right with me. I look around.
The shopkeeper moves to behind the counter and opens a drawer with a little glance up at Daniel. The older man in his black suit and Stetson turns and takes a pen from a shelf. He opens up a checkbook and starts to write. The shopkeeper takes a handful of money from the drawer. He moves along the counter and looks up at more shelves, upon which there are rows of boots and folded up fabric. He takes down a boot, stuffs his hand inside it, and takes out more cash. Daniel continues writing the check. Next to him, Sammy watches in amazement. He looks at her with a smile. She backs away. The shopkeeper's still thinking to himself. He clambers onto the counter and retrieves more money from an upper level, then continues thinking. He enters another part of the shop cordoned off with chicken wire. There are shelves piled with crockery. He reaches up and opens the lid of a chamber pot, taking out more money. Some of the townsmen have gathered to watch.
Smart.
25, 30, 35, 40, 45.
He frowns at one of the dollar bills.
It's a Confederate.
40 will do me fine.
I didn't dig into my real reserves. They ain't here.
Hey, Wasser. Thank you very much.
The shopkeeper stares at the check as Daniel takes the handful of cash and moves through the townsfolk. He leaves the store with Sammy at his side. He folds up the money and puts it into his pocket.
You know about them city telephone machines for talking?
Yeah, what about them?
Seems foolish to me. Ain't nobody in the Ozarks don't know you got $100 right now.
Out in the countryside, they stop at a rickety fence between two rocks.
Remember now, you keep Shep. I'll do the talking.
Anything you say, Sammy.
It ain't gonna be so pleasant on account of Aunt Molly, it ain't. She always looks at you like a sheep-killing dog.
How about old man?
Oh, him? When he finds out you got $100, his eyes will get bigger than buckets of hog lard.
Daniel clambers over the fence and they continue up the slope. A mountain range dominates the horizon behind them. There's a set of steps bridging a fence, and next to it a gate which Daniel starts to open.
Don't open it. They'll shoot you clean back to the valley.
Sammy climbs to the top of the steps and peers ahead of her.
Hello! Hello there!
On top of the hill is a log house with a stone chimney stack. A dog is standing on a rock outside the house. An older man in a grey shirt, trousers, boots and a dark waistcoat comes out from the house frowning and stops by the dog.
He ain't toting no gun. Come on.
She moves down the steps. Daniel climbs over the gate. The older man watches the newcomers walk along the path towards the house and stop near the dog.
I told you before, you ain't wanted here.
Where's your woman?
Down by the hog's gall. So you're the cousin, hey? What do you want?
He wants to buy some dirt land.
The older man nods at the door.
Go on in. I'll fetch my woman.
Daniel glances at Sammy as if for reassurance. Old Matt moves down a muddy slope at the side of his house. Daniel and Sammy look at the guard dog, which is baring its teeth.
Well, I worry him. You head for the house.
She rushes away from the dog. It chases her and she runs round a pole which the dog's lead is tethered to. Daniel hurries onto the veranda. She hurries up towards Daniel.
He's ornery, just like them he watches for. He ain't educated to city talk. You gotta twist him around a pole or something to get what you want. You see?
Yes, I do.
She turns to the door and opens it carefully. Daniel takes off his hat and steps inside. He moves past a wooden staircase. He starts to undo his jacket and stops. Nearby, sitting cross-legged with his back to him, is a dark-haired young man in his 20s. The man sitting below a window, through which a shaft of light is streaming. Little bits of dust are twinkling within its beams, and the man appears transfixed. He looks round at the newcomers with an innocent expression.
Friends, Pete.
Pete gets up onto his knees with an expression of uncertainty, not taking his eyes off the visitors. He gets up, leaning against a cupboard.
Well, nobody hurt you.
The man smiles bashfully. He has a thick grey colourless shirt on, dark trousers, and a single leather brace holding them up.
That's Pete. He ain't right.
Pete? Molly and old Matt's boy.
Young Matt's cousin. Well, pretty near it.
Molly trudges up a log staircase up the side of the wooden house. Old Matt follows behind her. She opens the front door and stops and frowns at the visitors. Wearing a plain grey dress with a leather apron round her waist, she approaches Sammy and Daniel with the same suspicious, unyielding stare.
Aunt Molly, this is Mr. Howard.
Strangers ain't wanted. What brung you here?
He wants to buy some Matthew's land.
Molly just glares at Daniel coldly.
He's my cousin. He's got $100.
Shucks. For $100, we can let you have that finger of land down by the twisted sassafras. No?
No.
If it's a question of more money, Mrs. Matthews, I'd be glad to give you $100 cash and something each month.
Now, we got them uplands on the sun side. They ain't been brushed off yet, but if you're looking for...
He ain't.
I'd like to buy Moaning Meadow.
Everyone looks shocked by this. Pete gets up looking concerned and grabs his parents, trying to get their attention.
Shut up.
Sammy gives Daniel a mildly disappointed look. Molly steps up to Daniel and with the same frown, she shakes her head slowly.
Not for no $100, no. It'd take more money than you'd ever have. It'd take $1,000.
All right. I'll pay $1,000. If you'll allow me to give you the $100 now and $75 a month until the $1,000 is paid.
You'll pay $1,000?
Yes. Have you pen and paper?
Molly moves away from him. She heads towards a wooden dresser and opens a drawer while Pete stands and watches somberly. He appears a little emotional and marches out of the house. He stops and looks in through the window as his mother brings a little inkwell, quill pen and paper and sets them down onto a table. Old Matt pulls back a chair for Daniel, who smiles and, putting his hat on the table, sits down. He scratches his forehead as he loads the quill pen with ink and starts to write. Then Sammy and Daniel head back through the countryside.
You unbounded your word and spoke. That's what you've done. $100 and promised more. You made a swap with a bad tangle in it.
She pulls a leaf off a plant and sniffs it.
Smell. Besides which, on account of you disobeying me, you bought an unhappy land.
Well, you see, Molding Sammy...
Meadow. Won't nobody come to pay your company there, nor warm by your fire with you?
Well, it might be that unhappy land, like unhappy people, needs someone to care for it.
They stop and stand by a gap in a fence. Beyond them, a path winds up a slope through woodland. Sammy turns and covers her eyes with her hands.
I
I beg the good omens I've had through the week to counter the spell of the spirits who seek to dampen the wishes I've knotted in yarn. I darken the luck of a pulley bone charm. One and one is two and three out of five. Dead spirits stay dead and alive and alive.
Listen,
you see that buckbrush, Mr. Howard? Well, I've passed it into them chinkapins. Then you travel a bench up the steep hill, down past the deer lake into them low big gaps. That's Moaning Meadow. Goodbye, Mr. Howard.
Sammy, there's no sense to all this.
I'm telling you, for the last and final time. Them that goes in there has daylight dreams and all is disremembers. And there's poison plants and pokeberries and nightshades dancing with the bats. Goodbye, Mr. Howard.
Daniel watches Sammy rush off back the way they came, through some trees and into a clearing. He turns back to the gap in the fence and heads through it. He moves purposefully along the narrow path between trees and bushes. He bends down slightly as he negotiates overhanging branches. He continues through a meadow and steps over a large tree trunk lying across it. In front of him is a rustic cottage, again made from stone and logs. He stops and looks at it, adjusting his hat slightly as he considers the building. He takes a deep breath, and with a thoughtful frown, he moves slowly towards it. He climbs the steps up onto a wooden deck at the front of the house. There's a dry stone chimney stack in one corner of the building and an undulating old roof over it. Daniel stands at the front door. He takes a key out of his pocket and unlocks a padlock on the door latch. He has to give the door a shove to get it open. It's dark inside. Daniel lingers in the doorway and looks round. He moves across the room through the shadows. He stands by a sash window and opens its shutters, letting light into the house. He turns and looks round at the room again. He takes off his hat and puts it on a side table, in front of which there's a spinning wheel. He looks down at a small upright piano beside him, which has a candlestick and a jewellery box on top of it. He strokes the side of it gently, then he moves round it and carefully sits at it. He looks down at the keys and starts to play. He looks up with a slight frown. Engraved into the wood of the piano in Gothic script is the name Sarah. He leans his head forward slightly, and a whimsical smile appears on his face as he looks at the engraving. Next to it is a cream-coloured jewellery box, which he opens slightly. A silver hand mirror is lying inside it. He opens a flap in the top of the box, revealing another couple of compartments lined with red silk. He takes out a couple of silver bracelets, then puts them back. He takes a pipe out of the other compartment. He holds the pipe and peers down at it. He rubs the side of it with his thumb and continues thinking. He turns round and gets up from the piano stool. He moves across the room and crouches down in front of the fireplace. He picks up some ash and rubs it into the stem of the pipe. He gives it a couple of blows. An inscription on the pipe says, "Love, Sarah." Daniel clasps the pipe in his hands and continues thinking. He turns his head and looks behind him. A rocking chair with the letter S embroidered onto the back of it is rocking gently. The breeze is coming in through the open window. Daniel smiles wistfully. The rocking chair stops rocking. Daniel gets up and now moves over to the rocking chair and studies it. Next to it is a little baby's rocking chair made of plain wood. Daniel stands between them and appears lost in his thoughts. He looks at some half-finished embroidery on a little table beside the rocking chair. It shows the letters D and A. Daniel bends down to look at it more closely. He spins round. Pete is standing on the stairs in front of the house, brandishing a shotgun. He scampers off. Daniel moves out of the house, looking puzzled. He stands on the deck and watches Pete rush away through the trees. A slight smile appears on Daniel's face as he watches Pete flee. Then at Sammy's house, Jim's sitting up in bed, leaning back on a couple of pillows. Dressed in a dark blue shirt, light brown trousers and braces, young Matt lights the older man's pipe with a taper and sits in a chair at his bedside. He sighs and puts out the taper with his fingers. Sammy skips towards the house.
What's snagging your shoulder, Alan?
Not any. It's just that from the time I was shucked out of neat britches, I ain't been so crowded round with notions.
Sammy enters the house. She stops in the doorway as she sees young Matt. She shuts the door and scurries towards Jim.
I'll bring you a brand new kiss for luck.
She turns to Matt and her expression hardens.
Resting up from devilment?
Nope. Just committed some.
He tosses a piece of lace at her.
Brung you that lace neck piece for your throat.
Sammy peers at him, slightly bewildered. She gently plays with the piece in her hands. She looks down at it. Matt smiles broadly.
These pants has got thorns in them.
She moves into a curtained-off bedroom area and glances over her shoulder, appearing unsure. Matt turns as if he's about to say something, but doesn't. Sammy watches him wistfully. As Matt speaks, Sammy gets changed into a blue dress with a lace collar over her shoulders.
Like you were saying, Jim, a blue-eyed filly is the most worrisome kind of gentle.
What?
No mind what you do, you never get a friendly whicker out of them.
Oh, the last I recollect, we were speaking of notions.
That's what I mean. You get to whispering to yourself when there ain't a single word to say. Bees bumbling at you, you get all tongue-tied, start smiling sidewise.
And you see plumb fancy with your eyes shut tight.
Feeling that way, a man most generally falls off to sleep.
It don't make a speck of sense.
Well, it ain't the sleeping or the talking back and forth in your dreams. It's the waking up and finding out you've been dreaming to suit yourself. Well, it's just like you've been saying, and I've been wondering. The heavier the man, the deeper his boot track. It just don't make no sense. Love don't. But there it is.
Sammy admires her lace collar in the mirror.
Well, I guess supper's cooling and waiting at our house.
He gets up and picks up his coat and shotgun.
Bye, Jim.
Bye.
Sammy watches as Matt puts on his Stetson and moves to the door. He opens the door, stops, and turns back round.
Bye, Sammy.
Sammy has a streak of a tear in the corner of her eye. She takes off the lace collar with an air of defiance. Matt leaves the wooden house. Sammy comes back into the main room. She moves over to the window and peers out of it.
I've been saying, and he's been wondering. What in thunderation was he talking about?
Something inside you gets to hurting. You're breathing so awful bad you want to yell out loud. And you know you're walking up a road ain't got no end.
For the sake of my tired soul's confusion, what are you aiming at?
He's been talking pretty words, fenced around with no meaning. Because love don't make no sense, it don't. Not when a man's got on his mind what young Matt's sworn to do.
She picks up an apron and starts to put it on. Large rocks are scattered over the top of a hill. There are bushes and the odd tree, and a wooden fence runs between the rocks. On the other side of the fence is the Matthews house. A figure is approaching on horseback along the dusty track leading up to the wooden building. Inside the house, Pete is looking out of the window. He opens the door and approaches young Matt, who's got off his horse carrying his jacket and shotgun.
Uh-huh. Smelled that peppermint candy all the way up here, didn't you?
Pete is pawing at Matt as he enters the house. At the dinner table, a group of men are all eating. Molly stands at the head of the table. She stares at Matt with an angry frown. She turns, then continues watching him with her hand on her hip. Pete is tugging at Matt's shirt. Matt gives him the bag of mints.
Here, Pete.
Pete's thrown the bag on the floor at Matt's feet. Matt looks confused. He takes a couple of steps towards the table and stands beside old Matt, who has his head bowed and is staring at the floor. The rest of the men continue eating without acknowledging him.
Something's wrong around here. What is it?
Everything's as usual and better. Set neat.
Matt looks round at Pete, who appears agitated.
What's he trying to say?
What you've been wanting most to do, Matt.
What are you getting at?
Look. $100 and more to come. Your waiting's over, Matt.
He looks round at Pete again, who moves to a row of key hooks and points to a missing key. Matt turns back to Molly, looking surprised.
You sold Morning Meadow.
For your sake, look.
Hayden, Hayden.
You sold it and you got no right.
She's my sister, same as she's your mother.
Only she has got a right to be in Morning Meadow.
Gone. But before you do it, you gotta know this. It's me running the Matthews and not you. Who's born and brung the misery on us.
I know what I am.
Then don't be forgetting why us are living on the hill, hiding from folks as laughing and talking. Don't know and ask us to no get-togethers. They don't want nothing to do with no kinfolk of your mother's.
No stranger's gonna trample on her grave.
You can't rest her easy by killing strangers. Kill him what put the idiot curse on my son. Him what killed her. Not the one that's going to give you the money to do it.
Pies and talk.
Young Matt leaves the house carrying his gun. Old Matt looks up at his wife.
You witch woman, you. You, with your sermon of hate. Casting the spell onto all of us for driving young Matt to murder.
You fool. You blind, drunk fool.
You're right. You're right. I sat there saying to myself, why don't you stop him? Because you can't. Because why? Because you ain't got the backbone of a fishworm. That's why. And what's more, you're tromped down. I seed it. The night she laid dying over in her cabin. And alone. Yeah, I told you I was down to the forks. But I seed it with my own eyes. You were full of the devil's sin, and it was a storming. And little Pete went out to help, and you followed him and drug him out of the cabin. And a lightning tree felled him and took away his sense.
You lie, you lie.
She looked at you before she died, didn't she? Didn't she?
No.
Yes, and anyone that looks on a dying body's face will be the next one to die. So you put your Satan's sin and filled young Matt with it. Counter the curse by killing the one that wronged her. And all this I knowed and seed with my own eyes and held it inside me. Done it for you, Molly. Because you're mine.
With a sullen expression, Matt slowly trudges back to his chair and sits down. He bows his head as if he's going to sleep. Pete watches his mother, who has her clenched fist pressed tightly against her mouth and a deep, thoughtful frown on her face. Pete moves away from the key hooks and takes a couple of steps to his father's chair. Sometime later, Daniel is standing at Sarah's grave. He's looking at her name etched into the bottom of the tree. He bows his head. Matt's watching from a distance, leaning on a fence post. He cocks his gun. Daniel looks round at him with a quizzical expression. Matt steps over the broken fence and strides purposefully towards him.
I gotta ask you to get off in this place, Mr. Howlett.
But I bought this place,
Matt. It ain't for sale. You'll get your money back.
Look, Matt, this place is mine.
I don't want to hurt no kinfolk of Sammy's.
You won't be. I'm not Sammy's cousin. She just said that to protect me.
Well, then get off in here and get off quick.
Look, Matt, I bought this place. And among honest people, a trade is a trade.
But Matt just waves his gun at him, gesturing him to leave. Matt puts on his black hat and starts to go. Matt follows him, but they stop. Andy has appeared at the fence carrying a shotgun, which he cocks. He approaches Matt.
Let me borrow that gun, Matt.
With a suspicious expression, Matt hands his gun to Andy, who unloads its cartridges and passes it back to him.
Some folks ain't to be trusted with a loaded gun.
Remember what I said. I'll be looking to see you gone.
Matt moves away from them and over the broken fence. He heads down the slope, bordered by jagged rocks and trees, the dusty path ahead of him covered in pine cones. There's a horse and trap outside Sammy's house at the lakeside. Inside the house, Andy's standing at the table doing up some straps on a long canvas bag. Sammy gathers some items from her work table, including a broom, and carries them over to the bedroom area where Daniel is packing up a leather bag.
It'd be bad luck to start up housekeeping without some salt, bread, and a sweeping broom.
Thanks. It's the right notion, Sammy. But the way things are in our mountains now, it needs more than salt and bread and a sweeping broom.
Can't hardly believe it myself. But it wasn't always that way.
No, there wasn't. Folks is happy. They sung songs. They worked. Now all they do is sit around and try to outsmart the government.
Seems like people nowadays are stagnating and filming over like a pond drying up.
Maybe there's a way of going ahead by getting back to where you were.
Sammy turns to him and thinks.
Maybe if we four begin it, help to lift the burden, others will come to help.
You know how I feel about it. You can count on me.
Well, seeing as how we're all of one mind, let me unpack you from Mona Meadow.
That's home, Sammy. But you folks come and see me.
You can have a fence full of open gates round Mona Meadow. You'll never be crowded for company.
Come on, help me.
She passes Andy a basket.
Andy?
She feeds a folded fishing rod under the straps of a suitcase.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Daniel passes Andy his Gladstone bag, then puts on his hat and takes his jacket off the back of a chair. He finds something in its pocket.
Well, I almost forgot.
He tosses a little folded-up shawl at Sammy. Sammy smiles as she looks at it, then becomes more thoughtful.
I bought you that.
Daniel grins at her as he puts on his jacket. Sammy continues thinking to herself. She looks back down at the black fringe on the shawl. She watches Daniel, who adjusts the collar on his jacket. He takes the broom and the bread wrapped in a towel. He picks up his suitcase, and with a smile he moves past her. The young woman skips to the door and presses herself against the door frame as Daniel moves through it and passes her again with another smile. She remains quizzical. The horse and trap, which Daniel's sitting in, heads away from the house.
Bye.
Must be the Lord Mark's folks to favor a purpose.
Nighttime. In the moonlight, Sammy, in a blue dress and jacket, rushes up to the gap in the fence leading up to Daniel's house. She stops and turns, putting her hands to her face.
1 1 2 3 goes to 5 days, 10 loves alive. 1 1 2 3 goes to 5 days, 10 loves alive.
She hurries up through the opening in the fence and up the dark pathway between the trees. She She continues rushing along a narrow track bordered by more fencing. She's now in the yard area in front of the house. There's a pile of logs behind her. She stops and cautiously approaches the wooden steps leading up to the house. She suddenly turns and covers her face with her hands again. Then she slowly moves up the stairs backwards, feeling the banister with one hand, her other hand still covering her face. She continues moving backwards across the wooden deck towards the door. Daniel opens the door. Sammy appears troubled.
Sammy, it's good to see you here. Come in.
The barefooted woman moves into the room and stands in front of the fireplace.
Sit down, Sammy.
I can't sit and I can't stop shaking. I couldn't sleep a wink. I can't stop the feeling inside me.
Daniel frowns at her slightly.
Past and present go together. I noted from the first, you and young Matt, son and pappy. Him in your eyes and you in his, and the way his mouth laughs when he don't want it to.
I'm glad you know.
He pats her on the shoulder.
Sit down, Sammy.
He gently leads her to a chair and she sits. Daniel turns and sits in a wooden rocking chair in front of her.
And see himself looking back at him from out of your eyes. Someday he's certain bound to know.
Someday he's certain bound to know. I'm going to tell him.
He swore a blood oath to kill you when he finds you.
Listen, Sammy. He's my son. If dying for him would help, that would be easy. But I know that if he kills me, loses himself, and you, it would mean just one more generation of misery. I know what it means to go through life empty and alone. I won't let him do that. I don't know how, and I don't know when, Sammy. But I will find a way to tell him. I must find a way to help him unswear his blood oath.
Before, it was just some worthless man that Matt always hated. Now it's you.
He watches her with a wise expression. Sammy turns away. She looks at the child's wooden rocking chair next to her. Next day, Coot Royal, his wife and little girl are sitting on a cart laden with wooden furniture being pulled by an ox. It heads through the hamlet towards the general store.
We can stuff you in a mattress and the horses will eat you too. You're the one flower that is true. No friend's flower, none can compare with you. Oh, born as so pretty as you are.
Coot gets out of his chair, jumps down off the cart, and secures the reins. A man is struggling to unload large slabs of stone from a nearby cart. He puts one down and, with a pained expression, arches his back. He's about to unload another one, but flinches as Matt and a dark-haired, bearded man march towards him. Sammy's standing on the back of another cart unloading bags of grain. She looks round as Matt and the bearded man head past her. Daniel's standing nearby, leaning on a fence with a mug in his hand. Behind him is a sheep pen. He watches the newcomers with a frown. The pair stride into the store.
Wash, take this. Got somebody I want to see.
Wash, the bearded man, takes Matt's saddlebag and proceeds through the shop. He puts the bags down at the end of the counter. The shopkeeper's standing nearby and he shakes his head slightly.
That sums up to $4, Corky.
Reckon I'll have to ask you to pass me by this time. Overstocked.
Wash frowns at Corky open-mouthed and chuckles darkly.
I'm waiting, Corky. And waiting aggravates me.
Can't blame me, Wash. Ain't nothing I can do about it. Folks have changed and lost their appetite for thirsting.
Wash looks out of the window. He sees Daniel, who's attending to something near the sheep pen.
These hills don't change for nobody. There's some people around here that are overdue to learn that. It's hindsight. Change your old friends for new.
Wash grabs the shopkeeper.
Corky, if you can't sell that to nobody else, you sold it to yourself.
I reckon I just temporarily lost my manners.
Wash steps back from the shopkeeper and puts his hand out. Corky opens the drawer in the counter. He takes out some money and puts it into Wash's hand. The bearded man glances at it. Meanwhile, Sammy continues to unload the grain. Matt leans against the cart with a smile.
Been trying to figure out what it was I liked about you. Come to find out, it's an easy style you unload a full-up wagon.
Hello, Matt.
Matt's smile disappears as he turns and looks at Daniel. He stares at the older man coldly. Wash marches out of the store carrying the saddlebags. He strides up to the sheep pen. Pete's standing amongst the sheep. Daniel's leaning on the fence of the pen.
What are you doing down here? Get out of there.
He's working for me, Wash. He's helping me with the sheep.
Working?
Wash drops the bag.
For you? You get on up the trail.
Pete hesitates. Wash grabs him and hurls him into the dirt.
Get up the trail, I told you.
Pick him up, Wash.
Me? That idiot?
Pick him up.
Pick him up yourself.
He moves to go. Matt spins him round and punches him in the face, knocking him into the sheep pen. Wash parries the next punch and lands one on Matt, forcing him towards the store. They trade blows as Pete edges backwards in the dirt. Wash tumbles onto his back. Matt hauls him up. Wash blocks the punch and thumps Matt, sending him backwards onto the ground. The two men are at each other's throats. They roll over in the dirt while Pete, Daniel, and another man look on. Matt lets fly with a volley of punches, knocking Wash backwards into a cart, which Sammy falls from. Sammy sits up in the mud, looking vexed. She gets up and opens one of the bags of grain on the cart. The sheep are escaping from the sheep pen. Some have gathered in front of the general store. Corky waves his apron at them. As the men continue to fight, Sammy swings the bag of grain around her head, then smashes it into Matt's face, sending him reeling backwards. Daniel puts his hands up to his mouth in surprise. Matt looks up at Sammy in a daze. She crouches beside him.
Oh, I didn't mean to hurt you none.
Matt puts his hand to his nose, checking it's okay. Wash sits up too.
Thanks.
Matt gets to his feet. Wash is still sitting on the ground. He's wiggling his index finger as if he's hurt it. Matt puts his hat back on and stands over Wash. He picks the bearded man's hat up and tosses it at him. Wash looks up.
Let's go home.
Matt picks up his gun and Wash puts on his hat. Matt moves towards Pete and leads him away.
Come on, Pete.
Wash follows behind them. Sammy approaches Daniel. They stand next to each other and watch the men leave.
It's a funny thing about him. As far as I can remember back, he's either fighting agin you or he's fighting for you.
Later, Matt and Sammy approach a fence up in the hills.
Ain't nobody got a right to Mourning Meadow. My mother's buried there. It's hers.
I told him it was an unhappy land. All he said was, maybe it just needs a curing for like unhappy folks. He didn't ask me who shot Pappy, he just went ahead of helping him. And Coot's baby. Ever since he's been here, he's been acting just like a good shepherd. Even when he talks about liquor drinking, he makes it sound more right than why we shouldn't do it.
Well, it ain't him. It's Mourning Meadow I'm talking about.
If he cares for Mourning Meadow like he says, and like he cares for folks, then he'll be a helping. Like what he's done for Granny Becky. Sent her off to a city doctor. Her blind-born eyes are gonna be fixed so she can see out of them.
He did that?
He did, because there ain't no bad in him. There ain't nothing but good. Oh, Matt, let him stay.
Maybe.
Daniel's in front of his house. He's sawing a thick log with a long saw. Matt strolls up the pathway towards him. With his shotgun in his hand, Matt leans on the wooden gate. Daniel turns round and takes a couple of steps towards him, rubbing his hands on his trousers.
I've been expecting you, Matt.
I come to ask, are you still of a mind to go fishing?
If you say so.
The weather's right. Now.
Then the two men are sitting next to each other on rocks at the water's edge. They're both holding fishing rods, waiting for a catch. Matt looks like he's about to say something to the older man, but appears to think better of it. Matt's head is bowed as he stares down at the rock, thinking. There's a ripple as a fish pops its head out of the water. Daniel glances round at Matt.
You know, there's a funny thing about fishing. You can let your thoughts drift downstream till they carry your troubles clean out of sight.
Yep.
Matt looks up and pushes his hat back on his head.
If I had me fins where I got legs, I'd paddle me away from troubles. Instead of wading knee-deep to meet them. Things come natural with mountain learning. Things I might could show you.
Daniel nods.
What I'm needing now takes a man with city knowing to tell me.
I'd like to help you, Matt. Can I?
Might be you could. Say somebody was lost from you. Somebody you had to find. Somebody you was in debt to kill. We got a curse on us. We Matthews folks. A curse as old as me. There ain't no rest for us, living or dead. Not till I find him who marked me for what I am. Aged my mother too young for her grave.
Matt, what would it be like as long as you live having to remember that you stopped a man's life? Whole days when you couldn't forget. Nights when you have to face yourself and him alone. Nights when you just pray for the coming of daylight.
Think I want to do it? That it pleases me to think about it? I saw a fella kill a man once when I wasn't half grown. But I stood up to it and looked, because I knowed that's what I was born to do.
But there's Sammy to think of. Sammy loves you, Matt.
Sammy? I got no right to love or marry. I gotta forget thinking about Sammy.
We'll find him, Matt. I promise you.
Matt frowns at Daniel, then looks away and thinks. Later, the Matthews family are gathered at their house. Old Matt, young Matt, and Pete are sitting by the fire. Some other men are sitting around the dinner table. Wash is whittling a piece of wood. The mood appears somber. Molly climbs a couple of steps into the room. She surveys the men with a sour-faced expression. Several of the men watch her as she folds her arms.
Dan Howard, he calls his name. Setting himself up a shepherd of the hills. We don't need no shepherding.
We ain't allowing no stranger to come in and hide among us and turn our mountain folk away from their learning. Making and drinking honest corn liquor is blessed of old. It's our living. Already we've been left short-handed at the stills and are getting closer to where nobody'll buy or drink our makings. A spreading his reach into the family.
Somebody's come to see us.
We're bad off to go a place.
Young Matt moves over to the door and opens it. He looks a little surprised. Daniel's standing in the doorway, smiling. Matt looks out at the chained-up dog.
I'm getting educated.
You was being spoke of, Mr. Howard. Come on in if you're a mind to.
Daniel takes off his hat and wanders in. He smiles at the others in the room, but he soon gives it up and nods at Pete by the fire. He stands in front of Molly. Her arms are folded, and she's staring at him frostily.
I knew you'd be expecting me.
She continues glaring at him. He puts down his hat and takes a wad of cash out of his pocket. He starts to count it out on the table. Wash, sitting nearby, watches with interest.
Payment on loan and meta.
Molly picks up the money.
Money's a thing hands can't dirty.
I brought you a message, too. An invitation.
You can take it back where you brung it from.
Granny Becky's back from her operation. They're removing the bandages tomorrow. Having what Coot calls an unveiling at Flying Clouds Bluff.
Becky was born blind. She ain't never going to see less than she's born again.
She especially wanted her cousin Molly Matthews to be at her first seeing.
Pete hurries over to young Matt and tugs on his sleeve.
Shut up, Sheldon.
Used to be an all-day singing and dinner on the grass.
You promise to take me with you, Pete?
Let him gather. Let Becky see. Let him sing.
You'll be missed if you're not there.
She moves away. Daniel turns to the door, puts his hat on, and stops.
Must forget you, Pete.
He takes some money out of his pocket and offers it to Pete. The young man looks away.
You earned it. And more.
Pete takes it and stuffs it into his pocket.
Well, that's twice as much as any two of us earned last month.
Daniel smiles and leaves the house. Wash hurls his knife at the door and it sticks into it. Looking unimpressed, young Matt takes the knife out of the door and folds it back up. Next day, a group of the townsfolk have gathered on the hilltop. They're perched on rocks, listening to one of the men singing.
Far away, somewhere beyond the horizon, there's a happy, happy hunting ground. Strange new sight. You will be feasting your eyes on in that happy, happy hunting ground.
One of Coot's handmade wooden rocking chairs has been set out nearby.
Long yellow fish that walk.
Both wearing beige Stetson hats, Andy and Daniel are sitting waiting on a rock. Corky's warming a poker on a little fire. Pete's leaning on another rock, looking out towards the mountains.
So far away.
Young Matt and Sammy are sitting next to each other on another rock. Matt in a dark shirt and brown trousers, Sammy in her blue dress and lace collar. The rest of the Matthews are sitting round a campfire nearby. Coot Royal approaches them in a three-piece beige suit and black hat. He's leading a mule, on the back of which is Granny Becky, who has a dark handkerchief around her eyes. They move past some of the townsfolk's horses, tied up to trees. The man who was singing cranes his neck.
Here she comes.
The group gathered around the man all turn round to watch. Coot is holding the mule's reins in one hand and his boots in the other as he walks barefoot along the dusty path. He looks back at the old lady with a smile. Coot's wife and little girl are following the mule, holding hands. The barefooted man leads them towards the solitary rocking chair. Some of the Matthews are now standing watching. Pete sits up on his rocky seat. He turns round to watch as Daniel lifts Granny Becky down off the mule. Then Coot takes her arm and guides the old lady towards the chair. She sits down in the chair. Daniel looks on with concern. Andy approaches him and stands beside him to watch too. Coot and his wife undo the dark handkerchief around the old lady's head. She has white bandages around her eyes.
You gotta get ready now, Ma.
I'm ready.
Two old ladies watch. Wash and old Matt, a bearded guy and a man with a big ginger moustache, all look on too. Coot's wife slowly unwraps the bandages from around Granny Becky's eyes. The old lady's eyes are closed. Coot and his wife are crouching either side of her chair. Granny Becky opens her eyes slightly. She lifts her hand up to her face slowly. She lifts her head and puts her hand over her eyes. She withdraws her hand from her face and stares at Coot's wife somberly. Then she looks up.
Thank you, God.
Coot and his wife chuckle. Coot holds the old lady's hand. Daniel smiles slightly and Andy pats him on the shoulder. Granny Becky puts her hand out and wipes Coot's wife's eye with her finger.
The first tear ever seen. A mighty pretty thing for human gladness.
She taps the ground with her foot with an expression of wonder. She leans down and picks up a handful of dust.
I'm a seeing. I'm a witness to the color of God's good dirt.
She lifts her head up. Coot's little girl is giving her a huge grin. She moves towards her and the old lady smiles.
I'm saving you, child. These old eyes got used to seeing pretty things.
She gives the little girl a big hug.
Howdy, Granny Becky.
You and your chairs are rocking me to seeing all over the place.
She becomes aware of the crowd of villagers gathered nearby. She gets up out of her seat and surveys them. She approaches the shopkeeper, who's wearing a grey jacket and trousers and a black hat.
You mind speaking to me?
Hello, Granny Becky.
You're Corky. And me a thinking you're a sawed-off little un.
Grinning, she looks along the line of townsfolk. At the end of the line, the Matthews are gathered. Molly's sitting on a log, leaning her head against her hand. Granny Becky's expression hardens and she pulls her shawl closer around her shoulders. She steps towards the group determinedly. Molly frowns at the old lady. Becky points her finger at her hesitantly.
You're Molly Matthews, my blood cousin. I ask a purpose to have you here. Because I recollect you had a gift for love and kindness when you was a girl. Now there's a devil in you. Your soul's ate up with hate. You meddling old fool. We hadn't ought to come, like I told you.
Molly moves away from her husband. Granny Becky stares at old Matt, who attempts a smile. The old lady gives him a little smile back. Sammy and young Matt move to the front of the watching crowd. The old lady slowly makes her way towards them. Sammy steps up to her and touches her elbow.
I'm Sammy Lane. Well, bless the sight of you, child. And Who is he?
Him, you know him. That's young Matt Matthews.
Matt gives her a warm smile, too. Becky takes a step towards him and looks quizzical.
Then I'm as blind as ever I was. He's no Matthews. No more than he's a pies and ball nobber.
She glances at Sammy, then peers at Matt again and frowns. Then her eyes dart to Daniel, who's standing next to him. She looks back and forth at Daniel and young Matt.
No, Sammy. He's kin to his image. Son of his father, if I can see it all.
That's Mr. Howitt.
Matt appears confused and keeps looking round at Daniel. The older man just stares back at him somberly. Matt starts to walk away. Sammy blocks his path and grabs him.
Don't, Matt. She told you the truth. He was gonna tell you himself. Get his rifle, Pete.
Stay where you are, Matt. Leave your rifle resting where it's at.
Andy's pointing his shotgun at Matt. Pete pulls Matt's gun from the holster on his horse.
Right away! Stop, you poor fool!
Pete rushes up onto a tall rock. He's about to throw the gun down the hill, but Molly grabs it and they wrestle for control of the weapon.
Let go, Pete! Let go!
Pete gazes blankly at his mother and he keels over, dropping onto his side on the rock. Molly frowns as she watches the young man. Pete manages to sit up a little and face her with tears in his eyes. Then he flops down again. Matt looks shocked, and he lowers his gun, and Matt rushes up the slope towards them. He jumps into the cluster of rocks and turns Pete onto his back. Pete gives Matt an innocent smile. Matt pats him on the shoulder and touches his face. Granny Becky and Coot Royal are standing next to each other, watching from a distance.
I wish I'd stayed stone blind in the good, clean dark.
Matt carries Pete's body down from the rocks. Molly follows them a moment, then stops with a look of grave concern. Old Matt stands beside her. He looks at his wife, who's sobbing bitterly. He pats her on the back.
What's done is done. We'll go home.
Mr. Matthews takes the gun off his wife. The couple follow young Matt a little way behind. Sammy watches them, then joins the departing group. The townsfolk line the pathway on either side of them. Then the crowd starts to follow on in a long procession. But Daniel isn't moving. He's just standing in the middle of the path, staring at the ground. Andy approaches him and puts his hand on his shoulder. At the Matthews house, Pete is lying on his back in a bed, young Matt sitting at his bedside. Old Matt, Molly and Sammy are standing on the other side of the bed.
He done it! He done it! If Pete dies, it's 'cause you all are standing around here mourning woman-like, instead of shedding the blood that laid the curse on the Matthews from her day to this.
Young Matt gives the old woman a weary look. Sammy watches him thoughtfully. Matt glances at the injured man.
I guess I'm the only one to end the curse.
Matt stands up and moves around the end of the bed. He goes up a couple of steps and picks out his shotgun, which was on top of one of the beams above him. Sammy looks concerned and heads up the steps too. With a grim face, Matt steps towards the door, but Sammy is standing in the way.
Don't, please don't, Matt. I've been waiting and praying to stop you. You've got to turn back. Turn back from killing.
Get out of the way, Sammy. Go home.
If you go, it's all ended between us. All the feelings and hopes.
There never was no hopes between us.
Sammy's eyes are filled with tears. She looks stunned. Without emotion, Matt just stares back at her and puts on his hat. He moves her out of the way of the door, opens it, and strides out into the night. Sammy steps onto the veranda, looking troubled.
Don't, Matt.
In the twilight, Matt marches down a rocky path. Sammy lingers on the veranda for a moment, watching him go. She thinks to herself, then turns and looks back into the house. Molly and old Matt are still standing over Pete's bed. Sammy takes the door handle and quietly closes the door, remaining outside. With a worried expression, she heads quickly away. Inside the house, old Matt sits on one of the steps near Pete's bed to continue his vigil. Pete frowns with his eyes shut and mouths something. Molly leans over him. Matt gets up and moves to the foot of the bed. Pete's grimacing. He lifts his hand off the bed slightly. Old Matt looks grim-faced as he stares at his son. Molly holds Pete's hand.
I got some words saved to tell you.
Pete. Pete. Son.
Mama.
Molly's now kneeling at his bedside. Pete tenderly brushes her face with his hand.
I can remember when you had gentle-like ways till a lightning tree took away my speaking.
Molly slowly bows her head and starts to weep. Old Matt, at the foot of the bed, watches with an emotion-filled glower. Molly now has her forehead pressed against her son's arm. Pete slowly closes his eyes and is still. Old Matt moves round the bed. He stands over his wife and pats her on the shoulder. Molly slowly lifts her head and looks up at her husband, her face riddled with anguish. Molly again presses her face against Pete's arm. Old Matt pats his wife on the back, then makes a dismissive gesture, and with a sniff, he trudges away from the bed and towards the open front door. He takes his hat from a hook. He glances round at Molly, then slowly shuts the door behind him as he leaves the house. Outside, the dark sky turns pink. Inside the Matthews house, Pete is now laid out on his back on the wooden floor in front of the fire, covered in a blanket. Molly has positioned 7 candles around him in a star shape. She unscrews the glass shade from a paraffin lamp, then pours the fuel out of the base of the lamp onto the floor around the young man. She refills the lamp with more paraffin so that she can complete the circle on the floor around her son. She puts the lamp base down and turns to the fire. She uses a poker to pull a burning log out of the flames and onto the floor, setting the paraffin circle alight so that a ring of fire now burns around her son. She stands and watches with her hands clasped together as if in prayer. She continues watching the fire burn around Pete, shaking her head sadly. Young Matt strides purposefully along a wide path through the wood. Some sheep clear out of his way. Daniel's standing in his house, peering out of the front window. He watches Matt in the distance, advancing towards him. Daniel trudges slowly across the room to the front door, which he opens. He stops in the doorway and looks back into the room with a weary expression. He shuts the door as he leaves and moves across the deck and down the wooden steps. He marches past a little stone outhouse and then heads through a gap in a fence in the direction of Matt, who's still some way off. Matt's making his way along a grassy meadow, clutching his shotgun in his right hand. He marches onwards. Daniel is striding towards him with a heavy frown. From a different direction, Sammy, in her blue dress and lace collar, runs barefoot towards Daniel's house. She hurries up the steps and enters the house. She stands in the main room with concern etched on her face. She's about to go out, but stops and rushes to the window. She looks out and sees Matt and Daniel approach each other. A long tree trunk is lying in the grass between them, and they stop on either side of it and face each other. Sammy rushes from the house. She hurries down the steps and heads towards the two men. Matt lifts his shotgun and aims it at his father. But Daniel has shot Matt with his pistol. Matt looks horrified. He drops his gun and falls limply onto his back on the grass. Daniel lowers his pistol and moves slowly over the tree trunk towards his son. He crouches beside him. Sammy runs across the grass towards them. Daniel's moving around the young man. He kneels beside him and lifts his arm. The flames have now completely engulfed Molly's house. The wooden house resembles a huge funeral pyre. Pete is still laid out on the floor in the middle of it. Old Matt kicks down the door. The house is covered in fire, the flames rising into the sky above the roof. Then, at Sammy's house, a makeshift hospital cubicle has been created. White sheets are hanging up around a bed, which Matt is lying on. Two men in white surgical clothes are attending to him. Matt's eyes are closed, and he's motionless. One of the men puts a black jacket over his arm and takes a basin of water out of the cubicle and into the main living room, where Daniel and Sammy are waiting, looking concerned. A grey-haired surgeon with a moustache washes his hands in a basin, and as he dries them, he looks at Matt, who appears peaceful. The man approaches Sammy and Daniel.
I've tended him to the best of my knowledge. Hurt like Matt is, a man's got to have the will to live. Something he'd die for, to bring him back to living.
The surgeon moves away. Sammy watches him go, but Daniel's somber gaze remains fixed on Matt. Sammy now looks at Matt too and sits with a thoughtful expression. Daniel continues to stare at Matt's bed with a heavy frown. Sammy has tears in her eyes. Matt starts to stir slightly, his eyes open slowly.
The will to live. Something to die for. He can't be blamed for being learned to see and fight for the wrong things.
Matt watches their silhouettes on the side of the sheet.
I know, Sammy.
Why can't he live and see things good and clean and know that folks love him?
I watched him coming down that meadow. And I saw myself 25 years ago. With nobody there to stop me from making that mistake. I killed a man. I've been serving a prison term. That's why I never knew Sarah was dying. Why I couldn't come back. And I didn't want Matt to spend his life in prison for the same thing. I'd rather see him dead. That's why I shot him first.
The grey-haired surgeon has noticed Matt has awoken and nods at Daniel and Sammy, who move into the cubicle area and stand by his bed. Matt smiles initially, then his expression becomes more suspicious as he glances at his father. The two men stare at each other.
Ever since I got able to remember, I've been sprouting and growing too fast out of my britches. Reckon I never growed any inside till today. It's kind of like being born all over again, right side up. I ain't lost from nobody no more.
Sammy crouches beside the bed.
Matt
gazes at Sammy, looking a little emotional. He takes her hand and smiles. He looks up at his father.
Tell her I got a marrying notion. If she'll ask me real nice.
Daniel smiles broadly.
I'd admire, too.
The sun streams through the trees in the meadow, where the sheep are gathered grazing, and two sheepdogs are patiently looking on. The end.
Thank you.